We are lucky to have Adacom was coming on a sort of whirlwind trip of Canada. It's, I think, the last day of your trip here. So thank you for taking time to make progress with that. Adacom spoke yesterday at IQC, and today we get an experimental proposal by the same quantum gravity. Adacom is visiting from the University of Groningen in the Netherlands.
Thanks. Thank you very much. And first of all, thanks a lot for organizing this in a very short notice. So I'm going to tell you some of the developments which we have been playing with some of our colleagues, some of our friends. It's about witnessing quantum gravity by entanglement, and so protocol is QGEM protocol. And the gist of my talk actually is here in one sentence. So if you just follow this sentence, you will get the main gist. That observing the quantum nature of system does not rely just observing H-bar type corrections, but one should focus on things operations which hinges upon very fine tasks which classical system can or cannot do. So that's the critical part. If you really want to ask whether the system is really quantum or not, you really have to ask these kind of questions, that what kind of operations which a quantum system will be able to do, but classical will not be able to mimic at all a quantum system. And so this protocol, actually we kind of like wrote it in 2017. First it was reported in 2016. Same day there was another similar proposal came from the Oxford group of people. And there are a few developments and few challenges, more challenges if you really want to do this experiment. And I'm going to discuss a little bit of theory and experimental challenges with you. And if you really want to understand some foundational aspects, so some of these discussions have actually seeped into quite a lot of foundational aspects as well. Bob Wald has been working quite a lot with his group of students. So, for instance, it has some connection with gravitational memory effect for the QED and in general relativity. Also, the gravitational decoherence in presence of horizon, killing horizon, and things like that. So, I guess this gentleman is going to visit you guys next week or so, and he will perhaps tell you a little bit more about their research. Anyway, so let's proceed. So the plan. So the plan is to have an unambiguous test for the quantum nature of gravity in a lab. But as soon as I say unambiguous, it puts too much pressure on me. So what exactly do I mean by unambiguous? So what I mean is, as much as possible, a loophole-free test. So need of the hour is that really go for some loophole-free test where you can at least say something about the quantum nature of gravity. So I will introduce you the protocol, and then I will so this is one protocol, and there's recently we have developed another protocol which involves optomechanical experiment. I mean optomechanical cavity kind of experiment. But both the experiments will present you humongous challenges, and the question is how well do you mitigate those challenges. So this is what I will touch upon, the experimental challenges and future outlook. So to be honest with you, that I was telling many of my colleagues here that I have become like a PhD student, because there are many things which when we started this program, we never realized that we would get into the depth of these problems. And I'm learning every day something new, completely new aspects. And so that's the fun part of it, perhaps. So coming back to now the talk, so what exactly do I mean by quantum system and quantum properties? So whenever we talk about quantum properties, you have to make sure that you deal with something which a classical system cannot replicate. Yeah. So the quantum superposition and quantum entanglement. So quantum superposition has no classical counterpart, and similarly quantum entanglement correlation, quantum correlation has no classical counterpart. So these are the two ingredients which will go into this experiment. And you can see already that this is a special superposition created here, and similar special superposition created here. The system, I'll talk about a little bit about the material aspects of the system as well. So this is what you need. But just to be on the same page, let's talk about a little bit what exactly the classical and quantum means, or what does classical correlation means, and also what quantum correlation means. Now, given a quantum system, actually, a quantum system can give you a classical correlation as well as quantum correlation. And the distinction is essentially given here in this picture. So your normal states, so 0, 0, and 0, 1, these are just quantum systems, quantum state 1, 0, 0, 1. Yeah? So you can write down, you can pick up this state and you can write it down, example like A and example like B, and you immediately realize that example B is nothing but your Bell state. Yeah? And Bell state will give you correlation in X, Y, Z, all the three directions in incompatible bases, which a classical correlation will not. A classical correlation will have like, here you have got spin up and down. So you have a correlation in this direction, but there are no correlation in X and Y directions. So that's what difference is between classical and quantum. But in the experiment, when you are saying that you want to see some quantum feature, you're looking for this quantum correlation. Yeah? And this is the critical part which you would be looking for. That how do you see this quantum correlation in any experiment? So now coming back to the heart of the problem, that it's a very simple question you can ask. I mean, you can't ask perhaps a simple question as this one, perhaps in the context of quantum and gravity. So the question is, does gravity follow the rules of quantum mechanics or not? Now, there are various camps, there are various groups of people. They will say that, okay, space-time is classical, and you just do treat matter part purely quantum mechanically, quantum system, and let gravity be purely classical. And this approach has been there, I mean, for many, many years now. All the semi-classical treatments are based on this class one. There are colleagues like Penrose. He would say that any macroscopic system collapses and effectively behaves like a classical system. So the classical, the space-time which you see as surrounding here in this room is pretty much classical. So there's no point on even chasing the question. Fair enough, we don't have an experiment, so that's possible. Second class of people would say that, hey, look, there is no H-bar correction. So when you do the Newtonian potential is the lowest order term. But suppose if you believe in effective field theory approach for quantum gravity, so treat gravity perturbatively and quantize your H mu nu, at some point at one loop level, you are going to get terms like G square. Of course, you will get other terms, the momentum dependent terms. I'm not writing it down. But the leading order H bar terms, you will start getting like G square H bar term. Yeah? And then, of course, you have a suppression of 1 over r cubed, and so on and so forth. Higher and higher loops you go, you will start getting these h-bar corrections. And if you just take two cosmic strings, the lowest order term itself is a quantum term, which will have the h-bar term. It doesn't have any classical GMM by r term at all. So some group of people will say that, look, there is no h-bar. So this is purely a classical term. You need to go really at this second one loop correction to see any quantum effect. Yes, fair enough. But you immediately see the hierarchy. G is a small number, H bar is a small number. So G square H bar is even tiny number. So 20, 30 orders of magnitude. And perhaps, in not in foreseeable future, we can probe these kind of terms in any laboratory. And the third class of people will say that, there is no experiment. So yeah, maybe these class of people are perfectly okay. You want to be agnostic as much as possible. And the third class of people would say that every interaction comes in nature has a purely quantum origin. So although there is no H-bar, if you can extract some quantum information from this term, that's fine. But the question is how you're going to extract that information. And that's the challenge comes in. So what is the assumption and what is the observation for today's talk? So the assumption is that all the underlying interactions are quantum in nature. So this is what I'm assuming, including gravity. And the observation is based on these two famous papers by Perez. And I think in quantum information, people are aware of his contribution. Based on these papers, actually, many things have been developed from witness and entanglement witness and so on and so forth. So the observation was made by Asher that in the limit, h-bar tends to zero. So he was playing, as you can see, the titles of these two papers, that even though the system is large spin system, you will take a classical, almost like a classical limit. Even in that limit, in the limit when h bar tending to zero, the quantum correlation exists. It's very hard to extract that quantum correlation. So this is the kind of like observation I'm making here as well. So even from this Newtonian potential, you would be able to extract the quantum correlation, but it's going to be extremely, extremely hard. But let's see how far can we make progress. And you will see immediately what are the key challenges. So just to lay down the challenges here, so I'm not going to present you a talk where I will say that everything is rosy and you can do this experiment in, say, 5 years' time. That's not the case. As you can see from the level of challenges you have, it will perhaps take longer, 15, 20 years' time scale. But doing an experiment is still worth, because at least it tells you something about the nature. So what you're looking for? You're looking for something, a system. You want to play with a system, quantum system, which is as much pure as possible. You want to measure something from there. So you need some ruler. Like in a classical system, I have got a ruler. So in a quantum system also, I need a ruler. So I need a defect. So defect is my ruler. Now it depends very much what kind of defect you want to play with. But you want to cool the system to the ground state. You want to cool the defect to the ground state and then perturb the defect and the system itself to see how the system reacts to external forces and, create some quantum system. So, center of mass cooling, shielding, electromagnetic shielding as much as possible. So the blue part is purely quantum, but you see immediately if you want to obtain any of these things, you really have to also think about all possible other spurious shieldings or spurious interactions which can destroy your system, like other electromagnetic shielding, finite box effect, purely gravity. So when you're working on gravity, gravity itself becomes your biggest background. You have to get rid of this, the gravity gradient noise. So there are many, many challenges like this. And at the end of the day, if you manage to succeed, you come to this point, then you really need to find observable. What kind of witness would you like to make in order to ensure that gravity is really entangled? What kind of system you are playing with? You are playing with a system, macroscopic system, with masses around 10 to minus 14 kilogram. And for this 10 to minus 14 kilogram, you want to create a superposition of roughly of 10 to minus 4 meter. And you can see that this is the best we have achieved in a laboratory so far. Arndt's group, which is embedded in Zeilinger's group in Vienna, so they have taken the 10 to minus 22 kilogram system for macromolecule, and they have created a superposition of 0.25 micron. Kasevich's group in Stanford, they play with atoms, which is a very tiny system, but they can get a large superposition of 0.5 meter. But none of these are suitable for doing this kind of experiment. You really have to boost the mass, because after all, you want to understand something about the gravity, the gravitational attraction, so mass has to be a bit heavier. You can go for a 10 kilogram system, which is something which LIGO is currently playing with the LIGO mirrors are roughly 10 kilogram. And it's a completely different setup, which is related to this high intensity laser beam. And there you don't require such a large spatial superposition. Even a nanometer scale superposition is sufficiently enough to do the experiment. So the macroscopic system and large spatial superposition, these are names, these are the challenges which we need to face. But after all, the biggest challenge here we are facing is really funding, because any of these experiments require some amount of seed funding to make some progress. Okay, so what is the main theme of this proposal? So one of the main themes comes here is that there's a very nice theorem given by Bennett and company from IBM way back in 1996. And subsequently, there have been many, many papers have been written based on this theorem. It's called LOCC. LOCC, what it stands for, so just to give you an example, so this is the product state, and this is an example of entangled state. So entangled state cannot be written in terms of product of two states. But coming back to LOCC, what the statement is, that imagine you have got Alice here, who's doing an experiment. Alice has a quantum system, and she's doing an experiment. And Bob has a quantum system, and Bob is doing an experiment. But imagine that they are, suppose you have got some, Alice got some outcome. Alice has written the outcome in a piece of paper and hand it over to Bob. So it's purely a classical communication. So classical communication means that it's purely a classical field. Classical displacement, force, exchange of momentum, all these are considered as a classical communication. So what it means is that it doesn't have any Hilbert space associated to this protocol. You are talking in terms of classical probabilities. and you don't have any operator valued quantities, you don't have the notion of a vacuum state, and so on and so forth. So as long as Alice and Bob, they are communicating through classical channel, they're not going to increase the entanglement. So if they were pure, so Alice and Bob, if they were pure to begin with, they would remain be pure. They would not get entangled. Okay? So LOCC keeps separable states separable. They cannot. This protocol cannot lead to an entanglement. And you can see this in a very many different ways. Effectively, LOCC is a statement which what it cannot do. It cannot really entangle. That's what it says. So just to give some examples, suppose you start two states, Alice and Bob, and you can do all sorts of operation on Alice state. You can do all sorts of operation in the Bob states. When I say all sorts of operation, what I mean is the unitary evolution, because these are the the norm preserving operations. So you can do whatever you like with a unitary operation on A and unitary operation B. The states will, you can see that they will remain be separable. You're not going to get entangled. And usually in this is a very simple system, but usually you are dealing with a system which is like more complex. So you have, you are in a mixed state. So essentially you're looking into the density matrix. And in the density matrix, suppose you have got a system like, let's say harmonic oscillator. You have a quantum system here. You have a quantum system there. AIJs are various operators acting on your harmonic oscillator here, and BIJ various operators acting on this harmonic oscillator. But imagine that the gravity is purely classical. So then you are going to get the density matrix. Oh, by the way, you can abrupt me anytime, any moment for asking questions. So just feel free to stop me anytime. So effectively, when you write down the density matrix, you can write down the density matrix involving this setup, this system, the Alice's system, Bob's system, including classical gravity. But at the end of the day, what this classical gravity will do, it will give you some probability, and which can be captured by some complex number. So Pi, Pj, Pk, Pi is acting, is because of the Aij, Pj will coming perhaps from this Bj, the operator B, and Pk is coming from just from the gravity side. But these are all some complex numbers. But again, as you can see just by observation, that this density matrix will not be that of your entangled state. And you can, I can give you an explicit example to show this even more, a little bit more, explicit, where you will see that under what conditions you will see that there will be mixing between these two states, and it will happen only if you take gravity to be quantum. So LOCC really cannot entangle the system. So you have to go beyond this LOCC protocol. So the other question is, how are you going to read the? Suppose you say that you get Alice and Bob system gets entangled. Now the question is how you're going to read that entanglement. So you need some measurements, some ruler to measure this entanglement. So in principle, you can actually look into entanglement entropy, von Neumann's entanglement entropy, or you can look at linear entropy, or you can look into, because you're dealing with a bipartite system, you can deal with the concurrence and so on and so forth. These are all very nice because these are basis independent witness. And you can see that if the entanglement entropy is increasing, keeps increasing, then you can say that your system is getting entangled with time. But the problem is that whenever you want to do an experiment is always involving your surrounding as well. So that surrounding is leading you to mixed state. You are never dealing with two pure quantum systems. So essentially, that's the reason experimentalists like to play with something called entanglement witness. And so this has been popularized quite a lot. One can see in the Horodecki's review, the very famous review by Horodecki and Horodecki, and I think there are two more Horodeckis, the entire family. And there's also Barbara Terhal. She's one of my colleagues from Netherlands. So anyway, so what it tells you, so an entanglement witness is, so it's associated with a hyperplane. So you have got this picture here. So it's a sufficient conditions, not sufficient and necessary conditions. So what it tells you that if you have got, if you can construct this W parameter, yeah? So if you can construct a witness, and this is up to you, of course. Nobody gives you the witness a priori. You can choose any witness you like to start with, but there are procedure, how to find the witness, there's also procedure. But suppose you take a witness, and if you say that trace of W times the density matrix is less than zero, then you can say that you have at least detected some entangled state. Okay. Now you can make it even refined. You can choose different witness, and maybe you can come to the point where the separable state and completely entangled state, they kind of like separate, they kind of touch each other. The hyperplane touches each other. That will be a finer witness. So in principle, witness is basis dependent. So you have, this is something which you have to keep in mind, and it depends on the choice of the witness. But you can always, for the bipartite system, you can always come up with a witness, and that witness is something like, it's like a Bell's witness. One example would be a Bell's witness. Another example is the witness which here I have written down. And in this particular witness, you have to show that if you detect entanglement, then this quantity, trace of W times rho, has to be less than zero. Now you may have to repeat the experiment billion times to do the experiment, and maybe statistically you can at the end of the day you can say that with 95% confidence level, 99% confidence level, this quantity is less than zero, so you can ascertain something about the nature of the two quantum systems. So just to give a very simple toy model example, so to illustrate the point of witness, so suppose you have got a Hamiltonian of let's say you are playing with a number state, number basis, two harmonic oscillators. So A and B, they are harmonic oscillators. So you start with the ground state, and you perturb the system by this HAB, and as a consequence, your system will evolve, your wave function will evolve. So your wave function evolves to, you can compute this wave function, the perturbation in the first order different perturbation, second order perturbation, you can compute the evolution of the wave function. So what I have done here is I have written down the same wave function in terms of basis. Is called, sometimes called a Schmidt basis. It's like a product state. So you see that I have the way I have arranged things. So you have got this A and B n term, and you see that it cancels out with this. So once you perturb the state, your wave function evolves to, say, from ground state to, say, n and capital N, the arbitrary number states. And the way I have written it down, so in terms of product state plus something, you see? And this something, essentially, imagine if this were zero. If C and N would cancel out completely, then what would happen is that the final state evolves to, again, to a product state. So that's like products, I mean, you started with a product state and you would end up with a product state. But if this term is non-zero, and this you can compute, essentially these coefficients, essentially from perturbation theory, and you see that if you have any Hamiltonian, quantum Hamiltonian with the operator, in general, you will not make it zero. You will not get it zero. And you can, of course, if it is degenerate, you can then do the degenerate perturbation theory and so on and so forth. But in general, this coefficient is not going to be zero. And if this coefficient is not going to be zero, then it means that your final state is entangled. So any quantum interaction will lead to entanglement. Okay? Now that interaction HAB could be your, you can take it to be QED interaction, photon-mediated interaction, QCD, whatever interactions you can think about. And if gravity is, if you treat gravity quantum, perturbative quantum mechanically in a quantum quantizing your H mu nu, even you would get this kind of coefficient, which would be non-zero. So effectively, you can show in a very simple toy model example that you put any quantum interaction, effectively you would get an entangled state at the end of the day.
Two of the coefficients to be non-zero at least.
Yeah, absolutely. Even this you have to show. So that will be higher order terms. A and B n, you can compute, and so that's the lowest order, you will get this term to be non-zero, then A and B n, and so on and so forth. I'll show it. Yeah. So perturbatively, you can expand. Perfect. Yeah. And I think this is the whole point of quantum computer. You see that way back in 2000, actually, this paper was written by some of our colleagues, those who are coming for quantum information. They know very well Chirac and Zola's contribution, and you see that this array of ions. So this is the array of trapped ions. You are trapping them in some potential, and they are getting entangled solely by a Coulomb interaction, the photon-mediated interaction. So this is the essence of essentially quantum computers. And nowadays, of course, people are playing with even phonon-mediated interaction. Also, you can think about Casimir mediated interaction, all sorts of, any quantum interaction will make your system entangled. The question for quantum computer is how quick entanglement is developed over time. Okay. So in the case of, if you do the, so instead of the HAB which I showed you, suppose you take the same toy model, you take two harmonic oscillator, and imagine now this perturbation is your gravity. And you're quantizing the gravity, just perturbative quantum gravity. There's no nothing fancy, nothing beyond perturbative quantum gravity I'm going to use. Now, of course, it's up to you. Now, those who are coming from perhaps a loop quantum gravity or perhaps from some other form of quantum gravity, they can use their own formalism and can test it. But at least we know that, you know, perturbative quantum gravities should be valid irrespective of whichever you know, form of quantum gravity you choose.
To make sure that I understand.
Please.
So, okay, so you start from, say, your states, yes, mm-hmm. to atoms that are in process state.
Yeah.
Then they get interacting through gravity, so they get, because you have the statement that linear evolution doesn't change product state. So because there's entanglement in the atoms transferred into entanglement with the field, something like that, with gravitational field, is it?
Okay, so thanks. Yeah, so the statement is following. So suppose you start with, let's imagine that you have got two harmonic oscillators. Let's say that you have not switched on gravity. Just a very simple toy model example, I'm saying, just switch on and switch off kind of. So now you have got two harmonic oscillators, they're pure states. To begin with, I switch on an interaction and I ask the question, as a consequence of switching on your interaction, whether the two systems are getting entangled or not. So that's the kind of question I'm asking.
Yeah, it will. I understand, but if it were a classical system, that would be no entanglement, as I explained before. So literally, this entanglement in, because the state is pure, the state of everything is still pure, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So entanglement in this quantum, in these two oscillators, is kind of matched with entanglement in the
yeah. You're absolutely correct. If you take this everything to be closed system, then it will remain be pure. I mean, you're not. But now I'm going to look into the entanglement between the subsystems.
Yeah.
So in the subsystems, you see the entanglement appear.
Yeah, very good.
Yeah, absolutely correct. Yeah. So, yeah. Any other question? Okay. Good. So this is exactly what I'm trying to do here. So I just perturb. So I've got two quantum systems with the mass and position and the arbitrary momentum, and I switch on my gravitational interaction. Assume I don't change the light cone structure or anything, no fancy causal set dynamics and anything like that, just simple perturbative quantum gravity. And I quantize the HV nu exactly the way I quantize photon, except now I have to deal with the spin 2 part as well as spin 0 part, and I have to be a bit more careful. But this is a very routine calculation, nothing fancy, because our colleagues from, like Zui Bern and others, they have gone into even higher orders to 7, c to the power 7. So I'm just playing with the lowest order contribution. So at the lowest order, what you will get, so you ask the same question. So you have got two quantum systems, switch on your gravity and assume gravity is quantum. And you ask the question, how much is the change in the gravitational energy? Because that's what it counts. We always look into change in the gravitational, change in the energy. So in this particular case, I'm asking, what is the change in the gravitational energy? And if gravity is quantum, inherently the change in the gravitational energy will be quantum. So as a consequence, what's happening is that all these terms which you see, usually we don't write it so explicitly, but all these quantity, positions, momentum, they're all operators. They're going to act on some state, which is a vacuum state. So you get a series of these terms, and I've just written down the lowest order term. You can keep doing it. You start getting H-bar convections and so on and so forth. Yeah. So you will see that these kind of contributions, the position and momentum dependent contributions, will start mixing the two terms. And I think just I didn't want to flash it, but the devil hides in all the off-shell structure of your gravity. You can change any form of gravity, and you can play this game. So I'm playing with a simple Einstein gravity just to show you this toy model example. So again, so I have got two harmonic oscillators. I have switched on my perturbative quantum gravity. So let's say that I have kept them at a distance d apart, and the fluctuations, individual fluctuations, I'm calling delta xa and delta xb. I know these fluctuations for harmonic oscillators. This is nothing but my 0-point fluctuation, square root of h divided by 2m omega. So they are, imagine they are trapped system with certain frequency omega m, call them. So this is the lowest order term, and let's just to illustrate, I can play with the lowest order term and assume that this delta xa is much smaller than d, delta xa and delta xb, then you start seeing the interaction between the two terms, and you see that at the higher order in d, you start getting mixing terms, so 2xa xb, and that's the term which will lead to an entanglement. Position entanglement. And you can play the same game for momentum entanglement, position momentum entanglement, and so on and so forth. And now you can repeat the same calculation, just you know, you take the A and B dagger, write down the Hamiltonian, this is the effective coupling, and you can repeat the same calculation which I was showing you, start from a you know, vacuum state, you go to excited state in perturbation theory, order by order, so this is the lowest order correction I'm writing down, but on top of that you can go for even higher order occupation numbers as well. And for this wave function, you can compute your density matrix, you can compute the one which I showed you, the von Neumann's entanglement entropy or concurrence. Concurrence is very simple, it's just this operation. You take the trace of rho A square and do this operation and you get the concurrence, and you see that for the example which I was showing you, you get some number which is bigger than zero. That shows that the system is entangled. Just a very simple, you know, just for a feeling, order of magnitude kind of feeling, you can now place some the terms, the masses, the numbers here, and see how big the concurrence is. Now you can do the same thing for momentum dependent terms, higher order terms, and you can keep building up. So fun exercise could be, imagine that you have got two black holes, treat these black holes to be your quantum system completely, and as they are coalescing, you can compute how they are getting entangled. And so this is a kind of calculation, if you, for fun's sake, you can do this kind of calculation. Anyway, so this is pretty much the theory part. Now the question is how you're going to see it, how you're going to do the experiment. Because the experimental part is much more challenging. So what you want to do is that, so what we have been, thinking about it, if you want to really capture this, you know, the physics here in experiment, what you need to do is you need to create superposition of system, of masses. Yeah? And the superposition which you will create in something like atom chip, it's the same as your chip in your iWatch, very tiny chip. Maybe the construction of the chip will be a bit more richer, because you may have 3D structure of the chip, but you can't do that. And that's the place where, you know, we are thinking how to even create that chip. So the idea is that you let the system, now these are, right now I have not specified the material property, but I'll soon tell you the material property of the system. You're playing with a spin system. So imagine that spin is embedded in a mass. Yeah? And you know the spin interacts with the magnetic field. So what you do is that you let it pass through the Stern-Gerlach apparatus. That's this almost 100 years old experiment where the electron was passed through your inhomogeneous magnetic field. Because the electron has got a spin, it will interact with your inhomogeneous magnetic field and it will split. So here, this is the technique which you're using. You're taking the spin in a system, you embed the spin. With the help of spin, you create a superposition and you perform one loop interference. And here you are measuring whether spin up and spin down, all the sigma x, sigma y, sigma z. You repeat the same experiment here simultaneously, and you create a superposition in an inhomogeneous magnetic field, and here you measure the spin, and then you correlate the two spins from this system and that system. You can extract the relevant order parameter, and the order parameter is nothing but your phase. This is the entanglement phase, which at the leading order, you have got this kind of term. And delta x is your superposition. Assume that delta x is the same for both the sides and d is the separation. So this is roughly the order parameter. You can simplify it by doing the Taylor expansion, and you will get only delta x over d the whole square times 1 over d times tau. Tau is the time of interaction and h bar. Now you see that something which is very beautiful about is, and that I think everyone knows here, it's very trivial, that sometimes a classical displacement is harder to see, but a quantum phase is much easier to see. Because the fact that in quantum phase, you see here, g appears, which is a very tiny number. In the denominator, h bar appears, which is also a very tiny number. But the ratio is not. So that gives you hope that you might be able to see this kind of entanglement phase in an experiment. So this is the order parameter you are looking for. You want to make this phase as close as one, or as close as whatever your threshold is. Maybe your threshold is of experiment is 0.01 in terms of phase, yeah, 2 pi n. So this is what you're looking at. Yeah? But as I said, that you cannot do an experiment without environment. Your environment is always present. So that means that you need to take into account of the decoherence effects. So when I say decoherence effects, and I will touch upon the decoherence effects, a huge list of decoherence effects. So everything will lead to spoil the coherence of the system, but you can create the density matrix, including this effect, which you can parameterize by gamma. And It's a very simple model I'm showing you. This gamma can capture all possible sources of decoherence, dephasing effects. And at the end of the day, what you need to do this, you need to do this, repeat this experiment, and you compute this trace of W rho, and trace of W rho in a very in a small phase approximation goes as this, 2 gamma t phi effective. Yeah, phi effective is the one which I was showing you, the gravitational entanglement phase. And if you can repeat the, if you repeat the experiment, say, million times, billion times to build statistics, and if you find that this quantity is less than zero, with 95% confidence level or 99% confidence level, then you can say that gravity has entangled the two systems. But saying something is easy than really showing the in the experiment, because whenever you're dealing with gravity, gravity is the weakest interaction of nature, weakest force of nature. There's a huge background coming from purely electromagnetic interaction. So now the game is, how do you extract the gravitational signal from purely electromagnetic interaction? Plus something which is unknown. Maybe there could be some BSM signals. And that also you need to make sure that you have excluded that effectively. So exactly, in order to make this entanglement phase order one, you require some parameters which puts you in this ballpark of numbers. So you need the mass for 10 raised to minus 14, 10 raised to minus 15 kilogram, the delta X around 10 to 100 micron, the separation is 500 micron, and you have to keep the experiment alive for roughly 1 second, so 1 hertz. And that's also very challenging, especially those who have seen the LIGO experiment, which has been performed at 100 hertz, going down to 1 hertz is a huge challenge. But even though, so there's one background which is very prominent, which for us is that neighboring interaction is governed by your van der Waals and Casimir kind of interaction. But Casimir interaction is dipole-dipole interaction. It's nothing but the photon-mediated interaction. So photon being quantum, it will also entangle the system. So first thing, if you switch it on, you will start seeing this kind of interaction. You will see Casimir-induced entanglement in pure vacuum. Yeah, I mean, pure. When I say pure vacuum, means close to vacuum, almost zero temperature limit. Yeah. So this is the term which will lead to entanglement. So you have to make sure that your gravitational-induced entanglement is at least 10 times bigger than this Casimir entanglement. And these parameter space, which I have shown you, make sure that your gravity-induced entanglement dominates at least 10 times your Casimir. So that's something which is very interesting, that you can even verify the Casimir-induced entanglement. So there are many, many applications. So you can do, for instance, weak equivalence principle, test of weak equivalence principle. You can probe GR, even various limits of GR you can probe if the nature is, if you're lucky with the nature, because whenever you talk about any corrections to GR, it means that it comes with your scale, and that scale has to be sufficiently close to close to your experimental scale to probe, to put some constraint. But nevertheless, you can do that. You can probe even axions. So axion can entangle the system. And today in the morning, we were talking with Diego and our friends that even perhaps, the neutrino-induced interactions can also lead to entanglement. So there are all sorts of interactions can lead to entanglement now. So that's the beauty, that you can perhaps, before even reaching the gravity, you will start seeing, all the known interactions can lead to entanglement. So just to give you an example, the famous plot from Adelberger's group, usually they if they want to modify the gravity by Yukawa kind of potential, so you can constrain this alpha and this lambda, and these kind of experiments you can go actually way deep inside this parameter space of alpha. You can go to very, very tiny scales, 10 raised to minus 8, 10 raised to minus 7 to probe, and this is the region where this current plot is, the 2020 numbers. But anyway, once you can do this experiment, then you can probe these kind of regions. So you can also probe equivalence principle, but let me tell you a little bit about the challenges, because that's the place where fun part, which we are engrossing sucking all my time right now, but very beautiful challenges. So as I said already, that you need to prepare the initial wave packet as much pure as possible, because you want to deal with a pure system as much as possible. You have to neutralize the electromagnetic charges, that itself is also a problem, because if you take a diamond at micron size diamond, you will have defects in nano size on the surface, like here, the structure of my hand. So these defects, so you have to make sure that you neutralize, there's no leftover charge here. which experimentally is possible. You have to cool the diamond internally. You see the diamond has phonons, filled with phonons. And these phonons are vibrating depending on the size of your micron size diamond. We roughly have 10^10 hertz phonon, acoustic phonons. You need to make sure that you have cooled down that system. And I'll tell you why you need to do that. You need to levitate the system. You don't want to play with the quantum optics here, precisely because if you hit a photon, it heats up the system. You want to play it as much weaker interaction as possible. Magnetic field interactions are the weakest interaction. So you're roughly playing with a vacuum. It's at the level of vacuum you want to play with. So that's why you want to levitate it. And nowadays, the levitation is possible. People have levitated the trains. So we can levitate diamagnetic materials as well. Then you need to create a superposition. You have to close one loop. And there's a very famous problem, which was actually pointed out by Schwinger, Scala, and Ongle. This Humpty Dumpty problem. It's a stability problem. So if imagine that you're trying to, you have created a superposition, you have to match your position momentum, but now you've got a spin. You have to make sure that the spin overlap as well. And if the spin doesn't overlap, in your experiment, you're not going to see anything. There's no contrast because you're looking into the interference with the help of spins. Spin is your ruler. So a small fluctuation can destroy this contrast of your experiment. And that will lead to less of contrast, and it means that your decoherence increases. You have to repeat the experiment more and more. And then eventually you have to read out and repeat the experiment to build statistics. But each and every part has several subparts of problems which you have to take into account. As I said, that gravity gradient noise, because after all, the experiment is happening with a finite size. Experiment is performed in 1 hertz time scale. And I gave you an example of LIGO, which is being performed at 100 hertz scale. And so you have to make sure that you reduce the noise from 100 hertz all the way to 1 hertz. That itself is a big challenge. So there are many such interesting challenges which we are facing. And as I said, that maybe there are some unknown challenges, like could be some beyond the standard model interaction, which might lead to entanglement. And in that case, perhaps you are discovering something new.
So in this setup, what do you have spin that interacts? Magnetic field, so there is a magnetic moment.
Yeah.
The magnetic moment interaction, is it under control? I mean, because of...
Very good question. These are all these things you have to make sure that, and I'll give you an example, how well can you have to control it to do this experiment? You're absolutely correct.
But I'm thinking because you need to separate.
Exactly.
Strong enough magnetic moment, and at the same time, the interaction should be weakened.
Absolutely. These are very good questions. And these are...
Are they compatible?
So some of the things are compatible, but some of the things you have to really push the boundary of your, so that's a game which is hide and seek game we are playing. Certain things are possible right now with the current technology, like the example which I gave you, the atom chip. Amazing, this atom chip can create a inhomogeneous magnetic field, roughly around 10^4 Tesla per meter, but a simple Helmholtz coil, very tiny again, they cannot produce that much magnetic field gradient. So certain things are possible. Mm-hmm. And in future, this technology will further improve. Mm-hmm. But of course, there are certain limitations as well. So the places where there is a limitation, that's the boundary we are pushing to see that how much can we push the boundary, let's say in 10 years time, 15 years time to perform this kind of experiment. This is the game. Yes.
Do you have numbers related to all these challenges?
Yes. I do have numbers. To some degree, I do have, but of course, there are unknown unknowns. So you can always push me, and that's the fun part, that you can, more one can push you, you can then ask more and more noise. So the game is now effectively to reduction of noise as much as possible. That's the game. So this is a very famous kind of plot, which many people show this in this quantum system, that anything you can think about can destroy the coherence of the system. The system can absorb one photon, can destroy it will lead to some decoherence effects. If it emits a photon, it will lead to some amount of decoherence. If there's a fluctuation in the field, as Sergey was telling, if there's a magnetic field which fluctuates a little bit, that will cause decoherence. So any interaction can cause the decoherence. So you have to make sure that you understand all the levels of decoherence as much as possible. So just to give an example, so you can ask that where should you place the system? How cool the surrounding temperature should be? What should be the pressure of the surrounding system of the chamber? So you can ask some of these questions. And as I said, that you can encapsulate all the decoherence rate in just in one one form. Although there is some caveat to that, and you can ask me the caveat, and I'll tell you the caveat as well. But just to get some order of magnitude estimation. So, for instance, if the photon hits the system will recoil, and as a consequence, you have a Rayleigh scattering because the system is made up of dipoles. It's exactly the reason why you see the blue light. So this is nothing but the Rayleigh scattering, omega to the power 4. And you can compute the cross section. You know the cross section of the Rayleigh scattering. You can compute the interaction rate with this with the quantum system. And you can, so this is roughly the interaction rate. It goes as t to the power 9 and some material property where epsilon is the dielectric system, dielectric properties of your system. A is the radius of the system, which goes a to the power 6. Similarly, you can ask air molecule. If the air molecule comes and hits us, it will give you a require. There will be some require. So you need to take the, so essentially you are taking the geometric cross section of the system, and then you are computing again the rate. And here, it will give you the pressure, the number of particles, number of molecules hitting the system. So number of molecules hitting the system is nothing but your pressure, and you put a constraint on the pressure of the system to the temperature, PV equals to NKBT. And the air molecule mass. So all these things have been computed, famous papers by Hughes and Zay. Actually, many of these calculations have also been performed in earlier papers as well. And Schlosshauer, Adler's paper, Hornberger and Spy, Romero-Isaac's paper, and recently Meloni and Kanu, they have kind of like looked into some of these things. So you can put some numbers. One of the numbers is that what should be the external temperature of the system? Where will we place this temperature? So just to give you an example, so this is just instead of this plot, let's look into this plot. You have a quantum system here, and you have to keep it at roughly 0.15 Kelvin or 0.1 Kelvin. This is a rough estimate, because as I said, that the calculation which I have done is not 100% correct, but it gives you a ballpark number. And if you ask me how to do the exact calculation, I will tell you later on. That's a part of the Humpty Dumpty problem, essentially. How good the pressure should be? Roughly 1 part in 10 to 15 Pascal. This is the kind of pressure which you actually get in LHC. So in LHC experiment, when they collide the proton-proton beam, that's the level of vacuum they have created inside the tube of the LHC. And our colleague from Northwestern University, Jerry Gabriels, is one of the leading person who has actually created this kind of vacuum in a laboratory. And he can maintain such a at this level, 10 to minus 15 Pascal or 10 to minus 12 torr, you cannot talk about the pressure. There's effectively one particle in the system. So that's what he says, that whenever I talk to him, he says that at this point, you cannot talk about pressure of a system. Effectively, there's not a single molecule, not a single atom is hiding inside your chamber. So that's as good as that. So this is the kind of precision you need to do to protect the system, the coherence of the system, just from external bar. Now, there are also electromagnetic interactions. You don't want to seed the interactions from this channel from this system to this system. So you really have to create a Faraday cage. You have to create you have to shield electrically so that no electric field passes through a perfectly good conductor as much as possible. Then you also require a magnetic field. So essentially, through the Meissner effect, you don't want to leak the magnetic field. So you require a superconducting sheet. So you require all these kind of ways to protect this system from this system electromagnetically to reduce the background. And so just to give an example, you can calculate all possible sources of decoherence, and it tells you that how many times the repetitions, how many repetitions you have to do the, you have to perform the experiment. So the higher the decoherence rate, suppose just to give an example, if you take gamma to be 0.1, so this is the blue line, you need to repeat the experiment around 3,500 runs or 4,000 40,000 runs. Yeah. So imagine that if you do the experiment 1 second and repeat the experiment every 1 second, it's going to take 40,000 seconds. Of course, you're not going to do the experiment in just 1 second, loading and reloading. It will take perhaps 10 seconds or half a minute. And immediately you see that in order to build 99% confidence level, you're talking about something like 10 to 6 seconds is 1 month. So you're talking about the ballpark of 1 month, 2 months continuous running of the experiment. To say something in confidence that yes, there is some entanglement or there is no entanglement at the 99% confidence level. So these experiments are in a way it's very interesting. There's something called jitter, which I have not spoken about. Maybe if time permits me, I'll talk about it. How much time?
We're pretty flexible, so you're just approaching an hour. We can open up for questions.
So it depends very much on colleagues, how much they want to listen, and I can stop whenever they want to stop me, I can stop.
Let's say aim for 10, 20 minutes.
Sure, okay. So one of the problems is that how do you create a superposition? That itself is a big challenge because I said that we are struggling to create a superposition, and the largest superposition which we have created is 0.25 micron for a very tiny system. So how you're going to create this superposition? So here is the defect. So in order to place the defect, so we are playing with NV center in diamond. Diamond because it's a dense system, and NV center in diamond has been extremely well studied by our colleagues from quantum computing and also from material science perspective, precisely because the spectroscopy is very well known. They know the all the the states essentially. So what it means for gravity people, the idea is very simple. Treat it like a heavy hydrogen atom. Heavy because it has a mass. Hydrogen atom because it's effectively an electron, and treat it like it's electronic system. Of course, it's much richer than electronic system. I mean, the material scientists know quite a lot about these systems, and they can play with it. And besides, they can play with it because there is an electron in the system, which you can manipulate in presence of electric field, in presence of magnetic field. You can read the position, you can read the everything, whatever you want to read it. The reading is much more, much better, if I understand, from material scientists compared to, say, silicon or other systems. So that's why people use diamond. But whatever I'm talking about is independent of diamond. You can even take a ytterbium system, which is a spin system, and embed it in any heavy system as well. So for this experiment, what is important is having a spin system which interacts with the magnetic field. And just to give you an example, so here this is the magnetic field profile, and if you take a linear magnetic field inhomogeneity, so it's a linear inhomogeneity here, you can see that your up spin up and spin down states, they split, and they create a small tiny superposition. And why precisely? Because the spin dot, so this is called the NV color center. And this term is actually because the system is diamagnetic. So in presence of external magnetic field, it has also got the diamagnetic induced magnetic term. So B square term is an induced magnetic term. So it's interplay between this and this term. The zero field splitting does not really play any role because it's homogeneous, it's common to both the spins. So you see that the two spins up and down see slightly different potential. So this is a potential energy for them. And because of the slightly different potential, you can try to create the superposition as large as possible in your system. You can levitate the system. This has been realized by Brian D'Urso. In order to levitate, essentially it's like the same as diamagnetic levitation. You require everything you can approximate as a harmonic oscillator potential. So the trapping frequency is roughly around 10 to 100 hertz. But now the question is, even if you have trapped it in a magnetic field, but there are phonons. So these phonons vibrate with a huge frequency of 10 to 10 hertz. So you really want to bring it down to the ground state. So occupation number to be very close to one. And for that, you require temperature. You have to bring it down to 10 millikelvin level. So you have to cool the bulk to the millikelvin level from the room temperature. So you need to do all these kind of things to bring the system as close to the ground state as possible. You can use the many tricks you can do. There are very few people from the experimental background, so maybe I will not get into the details, but there are many tricks which experimentalists can play. They can map the electronic spin into nuclear spin. And when you map this to the nuclear spin, essentially it's like a spin, 21 centimeter line, spin flip. So this system becomes singlet, you see? And then what you can do is the S dot B term vanishes. You're left with only B square term. And if you put it a current goes as you will generate a magnetic field, which is 1 over R. In your Hamiltonian, you have got 1 over R square term. So force is 1 over R cube term. It's a diamagnetic term repulsion. So it's a diamagnetic repulsive central force. So it's like our solar system problem, central potential problem, now with the repulsion. So you can use many of these techniques, which people have not thought before, to create a very, very large superposition. So you can create a superposition for such a massive 10 to minus 14, minus 15. It's a mass independent scheme because the mass term actually cancels out because of the diamagnetic contribution. You get a very large even 1,000 micron superposition in a very, very short span of time. So some of these techniques which we are trying to now build, and based on this, essentially, you will create the chip. Maybe the chip will be 3D chip, and where you will do this kind of experiment. So as I said, that there's a very interesting problem by Ongle, Scala, and Schwinger. You see, you demanded the system to be as pure as possible, but all the interactions which you have added led to the loss of coherence. So a spin coherence gets lost. And again, you want to regain the spin coherence because you want to see the contrast in the experiment. So you see that that's why they call this a Humpty Dumpty problem, because once it's broken. It's very hard to mend it. So you need to make sure that how well you control the external forces, like what Sergey was talking about. And just to give you an example, so that in this particular case, the gradient has to be controlled, one part in 10 to the 6, one part in 10 to the 11, and that kind of magnitude. So maybe let me wrap up the things. I skipped the...
Wait, shouldn't you switch magnetic field when you want to...
The magnetic...
magnetic field. The yeah. System, right? Mm-hmm. To get entangled with gravity.
To create a superposition, even.
Yeah, great superposition. Because of magnetic field, you have energy split, right? So spin up, spin down.
Yeah.
So you want to remove this energy split.
Oh, that you remove it by putting in a cage, Faraday cage. So this subsystem has to be in a different... cage altogether as compared to this one. You don't want the magnetic field to be leaked from here to here.
Yes.
That you want to, otherwise you...
Inside the cage, if I have spin up, spin down, they are, if there is energy split between them, mm-hmm. then I don't see how you can entangle this spin up with this spin up, and this spin down with this spin down. You don't entangle spin down.
No. So just for one cage, you need to, one chamber, you need to do all this kind of, analysis.
Okay.
So anyway, you can do something similar like light bending experiment. It has a similar kind of challenge, but maybe because I'm running out of time as well, and I know that there's another talk at 1 o'clock, I'll try to wrap it up, but you can ask me various interesting questions. So the idea is here, this famous light bending experiment, now you can do it. So treat it as a quantum system, and there is a photon in a cavity, and you can look into the entanglement between matter and photon, so this interaction term. So again, this is very interesting because you can understand the spin nature of the graviton as well, which you cannot do it perhaps in the first experiment which I talked about. And it has its own challenges, but let me skip through it. And we have developed also the protocol, how to read the protocol for this system as well, purely in a cavity quantum optomechanics. Mm-hmm. Prototype experiment has been done. So very simple, like in the atom chip which I was talking about. This experiment has been done recently in Ben Gurion and MIT. So he's in MIT, Yair, and Ron is from Ben Gurion, and we collaborate. I'm mostly the theory consultant here for the experimentalist to put all the numbers and all. So for 10 to minus 26 kilogram system, we have shown that you can create a superposition, you can close the superposition, and you can measure the contrast and things like that. So these are very basic, very simple. But although we are calling it simple, but it's still very challenging, but very tiny systems. Now, from here, you have to go to 10 to minus 14, 10 to minus 15 kilogram, and that itself is a big challenge.
So have they seen entanglement?
No, they haven't seen the entanglement here.
You do something else.
And even that has not been measured. This is just to demonstrate that you can create a superposition and do the spin coherence and all sorts of things. So, we have not measured any entanglement yet. There's a huge amount of discussion on gravity gradient noise, like as I said already, that LIGO has gone up to 100 hertz and I have to go to the 1 hertz. So just to summarize, actually you need to go underground, and maybe you have to do it in a drop tower, or maybe use various techniques to get rid of the vibrational jitters to protect your system as much as possible. And there's a huge amount of discussions and papers have been written in this direction as well in this context. And so just to highlight that, you see that today, whatever is science fiction, many of the numbers which I have quoted you sounds like it cannot be done. It looks like science fiction, maybe tomorrow. I'm sure it has to be done. It will be done. It's just a reality for tomorrow. But it touches upon so many things. Just one simple question which I asked, I never realized myself that I will get into the, into troubles with all fields from, like ground state, quantum system, levitation, best vacuum, you're creating one of the best vacuum in the system, quantum manipulation of defect, and the bulk cooling, you know, unprecedented level of control in the magnetic field, material science properties, and eventually just to test one simple thing about whether gravity really works, follow the rules of quantum mechanics or not. So I think it's a very interesting subject, and it encapsulates all the branches of physics, actually. I think it's a community effort. I don't think any one group can do it, and that's why one of the reasons I have come here and spoken to colleagues from IQC. You require, international collaboration, and you see that Scotty beam me up. It sounded so simple way back in 60s and 70s, but you see just to create a small, tiny superposition, it takes such a huge effort. So thanks, thank you very much.
If people have questions, Anupam, you can just read if someone's going well. Any questions?
I actually have two questions. Why can you expect to see the same like phase shift like resulted from some like entangled terms in the gravitational potential, like in directly observing gravitational waves, like in gravitational waves interferometry?
So you mean from the LIGO like system?
Like if you could like have a better precision than LIGO and like looking at the interference.
You mean the LIGO kind of interference experiment?
Yes, having a phase shifting, yes.
Yeah, in principle you can do that provided your gravitational wave, maybe the origin of gravitational wave is quantum, let's say. But the question will be you need to make sure that you construct the witness and you need to construct the basis, incompatible basis, look into the correlation. So the correlation which I showed you, the witness, the sigma x, sigma y, sigma x, sigma z. So you need to do those kind of operations to verify whether, even the gravitational wave is really quantum in nature or not. But the problem is that you need to make sure that you understand all possible sources of noise. And if you understand all sorts of possible sources of noise, then you can say something. But the statistics is very bad, just only one hit. Experiment. So in one hit, you cannot say so much. You need to repeat the experiment many times to say something, because one hit could be just because of some external noise can give you some signal, can fool you. That's it.
Also, one more question.
Sure.
Any kind of potential that can give rise to such a phase shift, like at least as I saw in the setup, it looks like that any phase shift can produce this kind of like.
Yeah. Yeah, so one good question could be electromagnetic interactions. So you can ask in IQC, maybe colleagues are working with trapping the ions. Now, can they see entanglement just due to Coulomb interaction? Mm-hmm. And can they read the witness? And so that's a very useful experiment. Most likely that kind of experiment will be done maybe in just next, within 5 years it will be done.
Mm-hmm. Trouble saying that when can you actually say that like you're not seeing a like quantum like kind of interaction, because like any like assuming that any interaction would give rise to some like energy difference and you would have a phase shift, like given the setup, how can you even say that like any kind of interaction would give rise to this phase shift and then entangle?
Absolutely. So one has to be a bit more careful here. So you may get global phase shift, but the entanglement is slightly different. Entanglement is not the global phase shift. So, of course, there are many things which will destroy the coherence of the system, but you're specifically looking into you're not looking into phase shift. That's why you're looking into the witness. So you see that witness ensures you that I cannot look into the phase directly. If I look into phase, that you're absolutely correct. How would I make sure that this phase is coming from purely due to quantum nature of gravity? So I have to really make sure that the witness works well for me. The trace of W rho is less than zero. If that is not there, then I cannot say anything about the experiment. And I think when I was talking with Ray Wise, and he told me that we had a chat, and he was telling me that, it will be very nice if the experiment says that, gravity is purely classical at this level. That will be nice thing. Of course, it goes from our way of the way we understand gravity and quantum nature, perturbative quantum gravity. But his point was that suppose if you do the experiment and you say you don't see any entanglement, that will be much nicer. It will perhaps open up more Pandora box, essentially, opening the Pandora box. More questions, perhaps.
Other questions here? So I just wanted to briefly clarify. Both on the last question, entanglement itself seems to be you could have from an interaction which doesn't have sort of a quantum deviation from what you're predicting. So if you want to understand sort of what exactly are the corrections to gravity due to sort of higher order effects, it's this sort of like you're almost doing sort of tomography, sort of figured out what the interaction term is in the Hamiltonian, but that would imply that you would need to sort of consider multiple masses, multiple distances in order to sort of do a
good
full reconstruction.
Yeah. So actually, you can do the tomography here. This is something which we have also thought about it. I didn't show the plot slide. So what you can do here is, okay, maybe the slide is somewhere slightly down below. Yeah, so you need to do tomography. To, yeah. So what you need to, oh, sorry. So this is something which we wanted to use it for axion detection. So what you need to do is that just to give an example of a tomography, what you so you see that Casimir is attractive. Just to give an example, Casimir is attractive. But suppose you deposit a small charge, that will repel. But you can hold it. So Casimir and Coulomb, they will balance each other. So there is a point where essentially the potential will get balanced, but also your entanglement entropy with time will get you know, balanced. And this is exactly what happens. So the Casimir and Coulomb at a particular instant of time, you see. It's here, the entanglement entropy, if you do the tomography now. I've shown you with entanglement entropy, but you can do it with the same with witness as well. And you see that anything on top of that will be your signal. So if you see a signal, if you see some kind of like some entanglement, which is hovering around here, it will tell you something new about either your modifying gravity or in this example we were playing with whether you can even control this kind of, whether you can constrain this kind of interaction, the simple Fermi axion interaction. So yeah, you would require some kind of tomography.
I feel like I should ask further because I don't think that was what I was.
Okay.
I guess I was thinking you can show that there's a gravitational interaction, but you don't have to necessarily show that it's a quantum.
Sorry, maybe I didn't understand.
You show that there's a gravitational interaction.
Yeah.
That the particles are interacting gravitationally,
mm-hmm.
And that. You know, the superpositions that they start in is relevant to sort of building entanglement with them, but to have sort of a non-classical description of reality, that should be required for generating entanglement. Which is to say, like, could you not generate entanglement purely from eliminating all other interactions and just having a purely classical gravitational interaction, but it still leads to entanglement?
I see. You're saying that whether classical gravity would entangle or not. That's the question which you're asking.
Yes.
The answer is no. The LOCC theorem. LOCC theorem will forbids you.
Okay.
So either you have to disprove LOCC theorem, which has not been proven, so disproven so far.
And then just for clarification, the shielding that you're sort of proposing between two sites, are you proposing using sort of charge-neutral spin systems or charged spin systems, because it's kind of easier to work with charged systems, and then you just have to.
I think it has. I mean, depending on the system you're dealing with, if you're playing with the so here the example which I was showing you, we're doing the tomography. I was not putting the electromagnetic shield because I want the electromagnetic interaction to dominate.
Right.
But if you want to just
latency is typically a charge system.
Yeah, that would be the charge system. But if you want to play with a neutral system and you want to get rid of the electromagnetic interaction, then you need to, and you have to make sure that that is very rigid, it's clamped completely, because if it's quantum, that it's a cantilever system, then it will vibrate and it will, its zero-point fluctuation will start disturbing the system as well. So you have to make sure that it's really clamped and it's a really rigid system.
Okay. Other questions? In that case, thank you so much, Emma. We appreciate it.